Welcome to Canine Hijinks, the podcast for those who want to explore more ways to have fun with their dogs and perhaps discover the wider world of training and dog sports. It may even convert the casual pet owner into a dog sport enthusiast. Join me, Alyssa Looney.
And me, Whitney Taylor, as we share our dog training journeys, as well as resources you can use to enhance your life with your canine friends.
Welcome back to Canine Hijinks, where we talk about all things fun with dogs. Today, we're talking about conformation with Jennifer Sider, a longtime competitor and breeder of rat terriers located in Southern Ontario, Canada. Jennifer has been involved with the dog world for over 25 years. Breeds she has owned in the past include an American Pit Bull Terrier, a South African Borbal, and a Central Asian Shepherd. She is a Canadian Kennel Club breed mentor for CKC judges for the Rat Terrier breed. She leads a local 4-H dog club and competes in CKC, AKC, and UKC competition in both performance and conformation classes. Prior to her involvement in dogs, she was involved in various aspects of the horse industry for 20 or so years. Welcome, Jennifer, to the podcast.
Oh, thank you, Alyssa. And hi, Whitney.
Hi.
I'm super glad that Jennifer is here. Jennifer is actually the recipient of one of Tilly's Tinies, the puppies that I raised last summer. She has Hercules, who is now 9 months and so handsome.
Very handsome man.
He is. Before we dive into talking more about conformation, though, let's talk about what we have been doing with our dogs lately. Jennifer, let's introduce our listeners to your pack. First, can you tell us what dogs besides handsome Hercules are living in your household and what you like to do for fun with them?
Well, I have 9. I have Bond, Misty, Magic, Joven, Rory, Ellie, Buster, Barry, and of course Hercules. And I have 3 12-week-old puppies that are still with me from a litter that I had bred in November. And that's Lolly, Shimmer, and Sophie. As to what we do for fun, unfortunately, up here in Canada, we've been a bit restricted on activities due to COVID. So capacity limits have made a lot of the events that I would go to really dialed back. There hasn't been as much as normal. 2022 is looking promising, however, hopefully for you guys as well as us up here in Canada. So what we like to do for fun is we do conformation shows. We do rally obedience. We do barn hunts. We're going to try some sprinter this year, which is the same as AKC's fast cat. And I think going to try a little bit of weight pull. I haven't done it for a couple of years, but I have a few dogs that I think would like it. Hercules actually being one of them.
I bet. And he'll look so good doing it. I actually just signed up to go to 2 different barn hunt practice sessions with my cattle dog and then my 6-year-old border collie. And I also signed up for a barn hunt trial in, I think, April. And so I'm super excited to try that. Lincoln, my cattle dog mix, one time I took him to a kind of intro to barn hunt seminar. And he thought that was the best thing in the whole world. And I have never seen him lose his mind like he did for barn hunt. So I was really excited this week to get them registered for that. And other than that, this week, we've actually had decent weather. So I've just been doing some minimal training, mostly with Ale, and gearing up to compete this weekend, actually with Whitney, at an ISC Cup event. Here locally.
Yep. Mostly just doing some maintenance type training. I've been busy with the 9-to-5 job and have not had as much time as I would have liked. So just trying to make sure I'm getting them regular exercise and walks and kind of keeping them enriched and not too bored. So I'm really looking forward to the weekend. I feel like I've been stuck in this chair that I'm sitting in for 12 hours a day, which it's probably not that bad, but it feels that way. So I'm looking forward to getting out this weekend. And I think we get to enjoy some decent weather. We'll see how it goes.
I think actually it's supposed to rain all weekend.
Oh, but okay. Never mind. It'll be fine. Whatever it is, it'll be fine.
It won't be the regular day job anyway.
Exactly.
So let's dive into confirmation. Admittedly, this is another dog activity that I'm not terribly familiar with, even though I often ask Jennifer all the stupid questions about it. I'm like, please tell me what that means that Hercules just won. So let's start with the basics. Can you give us a broad overview of what confirmation is, what the dogs are expected to perform, all that big picture stuff?
Sure. Confirmation isn't nearly as exciting as agility or probably barn hunt for most dogs. It's, I would say, in most cases, more interesting for the owner handler than it is for the dogs. But dogs like to be with us pretty much whatever we're doing. So going to confirmation is, and it's not a challenge for them in most cases. Most really sound temperamented dogs think that confirmation is just kind of an interesting visit to a new building where you get lots of cookies, essentially. So confirmation is the evaluation of your dog compared to a written standard. The standard is written either by the breed club for your breed, or it's written in conjunction with the registering body, which would be like AKC, the American Kennel Club, CKC, the Canadian Kennel Club, or UKC, the United Kennel Club. They can write them themselves, but they generally do it with consultation with breeders and handlers of that specific breed. So each of the breeds that the clubs register all have a written standard, and that is what a judge is evaluating your dog against. It's interesting. If you're a breeder, it can be very interesting because you go and there's any number of your breed there. So you're not always just looking at your dogs and thinking, oh, do they have the right head? And is their body in the right proportion? And do they have good feet? And is their tail at the proper position? And does it curve in the right direction? That kind of thing. But now you get to see other dogs. Prevents what is referred to as kennel blindness, meaning you look at your dog and from your perspective to the standard, you think your dogs are fine. But now you take it to a judge and a judge gets to evaluate your dog against the standard. And the judge is obviously going to have some different opinions. To get a championship, which is the lowest level to complete your confirmation showing in all venues, you, in most venues, have to be awarded points by beating other dogs. And you have to have these points given to you, awarded to you by three separate judges. So again, you get that opportunity to be evaluated by not just one person, but you get evaluated by different judges themselves. I enjoy it. It's probably not my favorite thing to do, but I understand the value in it as a breeder. I'd like to see what judges think of my dogs. I'm very familiar with their faults and their strengths, but it is very interesting to see what a judge who looks at maybe dogs not in my area, right? And that is in Canada, we have a very small group of rat terriers that show, and a lot of them are related. So it's a benefit to me to go to a show because I get to see dogs from other areas. And then I also get the opinion from judges who have, say, judged in the States, or they've judged down. I know we have a judge coming up soon, and Hercules is actually going to get to show to him. He's from Mexico. So wow. I'll get some interesting perspectives from judges that are from other areas.
So what does it look like when you're performing? Can you kind of describe when you go into ring, what does that look like?
Well, rings are not huge. They're only generally 35 feet by 35 feet. And you start in your breed and you're judged generally in a timeline in your group. There's seven groups in AKC and CKC. There's eight groups in UKC. Terrier is the group that I'm in with the rat terriers. So that means that we have approximately 20 to 30 terrier breeds that would be judged, usually in alphabetical order by their breed name. So you wait for your breed to be called, and then each dog is going to be judged to the standard within their class. Classes start boys first, youngest to oldest. So all the boys would be judged that are not champion dogs. All the girls would be judged that are not champion dogs. And then the girl winner, the boy winner from all of those competitors goes in the ring with the champions, or what are called specials. And then they have to compete against all of those for best of breed. So for a class dog like Hercules is, and my other boy Buster is, for them to beat a champion or a special is pretty significant, because obviously a champion or special has been out in the show ring often enough to be evaluated and have gotten those points and have been awarded enough wins to be a champion. So when they say a class dog has beaten a special, that's pretty significant. Judging isn't very complex. You go in and dog is on your left. Rat terriers are not required to be shown at a great rate of speed. So in many cases, you can walk quickly with them, a really slow jog. What they're looking for is a uniform gait. The breed standard for rat terriers asks for drive and extension. So you would want to go fast enough that your dog looks like it has both drive and extension. So drive from behind and extension up front. Judges usually like the dog to be shown on a looser lead, not what is referred to as strung up or on a tight lead. So you do a square around the ring and the judge stays generally at the entrance. And our breed is known, the Rat Terrier, as a table breed. Not very tall. They range anywhere from 10 inches to 18 inches in height. And most judges don't really want to bend over to judge a dog that small. Mm. So you go around and you come up and there is a small grooming table available. You place your dog on the grooming table. The judge goes over the dog, checks teeth. If it's a male dog, the judge checks testicles and generally gives them a chance to put their hands on the dog and check shoulder, chest, loin, back, and hindquarter structure. So there is some training for the dog that is required. They have to allow a judge to check their teeth. They have to allow, if they're a boy, the judge to check their testicles. They have to stand still on the table, because if they're going to be goofy and try to fall off, it makes it very hard for the judge to judge their structure. Once the judgment has been done on the table, the judge will have you do what's referred to as a down and back. And it's just you're going away from the judge to a corner and then you turn around and you come back to the judge. And then they're looking for the gait to be, again, uniform, not so much to show drive and extension at this point, but to make sure if the legs are supposed to converge, which our breed is, meaning from the front, that the forearms wrap around the chest and the 4 feet come closer together in the front than being sort of parallel and on the outside. Once the entire class is judged, the dogs are picked from first, generally it's called winners, and then it's reserve would be your second place dog. And then all of your dogs that won their classes, they come back in for their gender, their sex, and they would be judged to pick one dog that gets to go back in the ring against the champions. Not, again, terribly exciting, but it can be stressful for some dogs. There's a lot of dogs that are standing at ringside. There's a lot of spectators. Sometimes if there's a favorite, there's clapping. It can definitely be stressful. So it does require some training so that they're comfortable in the situation.
Well, it sounds like a lot of standing around. I just feel like, man, that would be really hard with a 1.5-year-old, or you said Hercules is 9 months and he's in the ring, like a 9-month-old German short hair pointer. Oh boy, that's what I want to do. Try and keep pointer still.
It can very much, I mean, it is definitely a hurry up and wait.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's like you have a ring time, but the ring time is approximate and then you have to get there and you're being judged. But once you're judged, somebody else is judged. Mm-hmm. And then once everybody's judged, if you won, you wait and then you go back in again. If you win your breed, like if Hercules, for instance, was judged best of breed, then you go back in for group. Mm-hmm. So you and 30 other terriers or 29 other terriers might end up in the ring together and the judge has to pick the terrier that best matches their own breed standard, which to me is a little weird, but apparently judges do this. I'm okay with it. Your judge picks four placements. So a group one, a group two, a group three, and a group four. A group one dog in the Terriers, for instance, would then go on for best in show.
Right.
So best in show incorporates all seven group winners. So the best hound, the best terrier, the best companion dog, that kind of thing.
Which, and that's the part that folks are probably familiar with, right? From,
yes,
like watching Westminster. That's right? The thing. Yeah. You see Westminster. And so, but all you ever see is best of group and then best of show. Yeah. It's very confusing. Yeah.
That's
to know
the easy part.
How many layers are underneath and how many times the dog had to show to get there. And also you saying that the breed, the rings tend to be small. So Westminster is huge compared to what you normally see. Yes. And so that's why all those little dogs look so tired when they're trying to do that giant lap in Westminster.
It's huge.
Yeah,
right?
It's really,
and
really big.
What we don't see to lead up to, as you said, the group placements and then the best in show placements is they just use all sorts of little group rings to get, or breed rings to get everybody placed.
Right.
My my mantra is group two and have beers. I don't want to stay for group one, and I'm really not that interested for best in show. I mean, if it ever happens, okay, that's great. But yeah. I much prefer if my friends win, and I'll just still have the beers quietly.
Oh, I think that's probably a pretty good attitude. I think the best follow-up question is, so when do dogs start competing, and is it different? Like, do the classes that they're entered in change as they get older, or is it always, it doesn't matter, like you're 9 months old, you're competing against four-year-olds? Like, what, how does that work?
You can start in, most of the venues have what's called a baby puppy class. You don't get points. You get experience, and they're really cute. Like watching 6 months old is official. Once you're 6 months old,
okay,
you would compete for points to get to your championship. So it generally is either 3 to 4 months to, and just under 6 months. And they're really cute going around the ring. And it's not a bad, I mean, they've had their vaccinations. They're good to go. So you're on a lead and you're just trucking around the ring. There's cookies everywhere because everybody wants a puppy to have fun at a confirmation show. Mm-hmm. Even everybody else knows it's not the most exciting thing in the world. You get used to a stranger handling you on the table and that kind of thing. So the baby puppy classes are really exciting. Everybody likes to watch the babies compete. Yeah. Sometimes there are really, really competitive baby puppies. They mature quick. They look awesome. They're rock stars.
Yeah, we know all about
whether they
dogs
actually make it as an older dog.
Right.
That sometimes doesn't happen. Once you're at 6 months, then you compete against other 6 month-old puppies. I think it generally goes 6 to 9, 9 to 12, 12 to 18. And then once you're past 18 months, you're considered an open dog if you haven't got your championship yet.
Okay.
If you get your championship quick, you could be a six-month-old puppy in some cases up against mature dogs.
Wow.
Which may or may not be what you wish to do. Yeah. Some people are very competitive and it's a feather in their cap that their six-month-old puppy is a rock star amongst, you know, 3 or 4 year-old dogs. Some people look at it and go, that's a very mature puppy. What is it going to mature like? When it becomes a three-year-old dog, is it going to fall apart? Is what makes it conformationally correct and really showy today just not going to be there in 3 or 4 years?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it is something that as a breeder, when someone says, you know, championed out of the puppy classes, got their points in 3 shows, that's maybe a dog that you want to seriously look at. If you were interested in breeding to it down the road or you wanted a puppy from it, you'd want to see how it aged.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I'm surprised. I'm kind of surprised that they will allow that before a dog has physically matured, because I would think you'd want to see that. How old are dogs that are doing this too? What's the other end of the spectrum?
Well, I would say the majority of specials, champions that people will continue to show because the dog enjoys it or they're competitive and they enjoy it. I'd say your range is anywhere from about 4 years to about 7 years. There are classes for veterans. And there's generally two categories. There's 7 to 9 years of age for veterans. And then there's 10 plus, kind of like the baby puppy class. To see old show dogs going around the ring, a lot of gray muzzles, depending on the breed. Like if they're a giant breed and they're 11 years old and they're still trucking it around the ring.
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely, you're like, wow, that's pretty good. So a lot of show dogs do like to show. It's not hard. You know, you get
cooked. Do the old dogs look all sassy and they puff their chest out like, look at me, everybody's looking at me.
And people always clap. You always clap for veterans and you always clap for puppies. So it really is kind of cool to see stuff like that.
That's super fun.
I did not realize that you were allowed to have food in the ring.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Westminster? They stick the cheese in their mouth and they're feeding it to the dog out of their mouth. How do you not notice that? Yes, all the time.
I have not watched this close enough to see.
Oh my God, all the time.
And there's hot dogs stuffed in bras.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know.
Not my bra, but AKC and CKC, you will have a lot of food hit the floor. So you can use it as a training thing for distractions when you take your dog around. United Kennel Club, UKC, which is another American club second to AKC, they have a rule, no bait shall touch the floor. Mm. So if you accidentally drop bait, your judge is going to give you a little bit of side eye and you best be picking it up quick. And that's anything. If you use like a squeaker or a fuzzy or a toy, you keep a very firm hold on it. You don't lose it. And I was at a UKC show one time, I was just spectating at the side, and a lady was running around with a German Shorthaired Pointer. So she was hustling because they're big dogs. They need a lot of movement. Mm-hmm. And the hot dog that she had tucked in her bra strap left her bra, ran by me on the floor, and made it into the mouth of a German Shepherd that was behind me. I was like, okay, UKC show, the bait hit the floor, but the judge didn't see, and we're all good. Nobody knows.
It's gone.
Except for the woman when she got back in line, and now she's got no bait because it's run away.
Right.
Oh, yeah. It was very interesting.
So you can have toys also. You can have whatever you want.
Yep. Whatever your dog is going to give you expression for. Whatever your dog is going to wag its tail and look all happy and give you a really happy face for.
See, I'd have to bring my husband in if I wanted to show Ale, except they probably don't count wiggling.
Right. No, you don't want
confirmation
wiggling.
Titles.
He would have to be the one to show her, Alyssa. Wouldn't be you. Okay. He would show her.
But she doesn't wiggle as much unless she's heading towards him. Then she wiggles.
Now, German Shepherd dogs are often double-handled. They will often have someone outside the ring attracting the dog.
Really?
Other breeds, it's frowned upon, but often in German Shepherds, you will see that.
It's so random.
Interesting.
It really is.
Well, and I've noticed that often confirmation folks will have other people, like professional handlers, handle their dogs. Why is that?
Depending on your breed, like there are definitely breeds out there that are very competitive. You might have to take your dog to a number of different shows, and a professional handler, that's their job, right? Shows generally run sometimes Wednesday, but most commonly Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So Thursday, Friday, I don't know about you, but I can't get that many Thursday, Fridays off work. Mm-hmm. So if I wanted to campaign a dog, if I wanted to get a title on a dog and I just simply didn't have the time, you can hire a professional handler. They're likely to go to those Thursday, Friday shows. They're likely. I go with a friend because if there's a conflict in the ring, I show a number of dogs. I'll show two or three at any given show. But that means if I win a female class and I win a male class, I'm kind of stuck because I can't show the dogs all with two hands. Basically.
Okay.
So when I go with a friend, we spell off. I help her show her dogs. She helps me show mine. But if that was the circumstance I was looking at, I could always hire a professional handler to do it. And they will have assistance that they pay that would take a dog in the ring. Some people like to have dogs with their kennel name on them or their ownership on them that win, and they don't have the time, or that's just not their thing to run around the ring. If you had a disability that caused you some sort of gating problems, although wheelchairs and assistive devices are welcome in all of the rings and in all of the venues, sometimes it's just hard, or you have a condition that's painful, but you still have a really good dog, you can hire a professional handler to do that for you.
Okay. And so the folks who are trying to campaign their dog, say you win, you get your championship, what else is there? Or are you trying to get that best in show title? What's next after that?
Almost all the venues offer something called top dog points, which is how many dogs you've beaten essentially per month, per year. Okay. So if you're doing top dog points, you're going to campaign. You've got your championship. You maybe even have your grand championship, which is the next level. And then what you're going to do is you're going to see how many shows you can win, how many of your own breed you can compete against and beat. And if you're very competitive, that's something to go for, especially if you have a number of dogs of your own that you've championed or grand championed. And now you're just looking for another way to be competitive. And most venues have also now offered not just a grand champion. They have two or three different levels. AKC offers, I think, silver, gold, maybe even platinum, I think, for the grand champion levels. CKC does as well. And UKC does as well. UKCs are named after gemstones. So there's like an emerald and a ruby and that kind of thing. So it just gives people who really like to show confirmation, just more venues, more opportunities to take their dog out and to compete.
Okay. Interesting.
What does a typical show day look like?
Very good question. And I'm actually going to a show tomorrow. I'm bringing three dogs, two class males. That would be Buster and Hercules. And then I'm bringing Barry, my class female. So none of them are champions. So our ring time is 8 o'clock in the morning. So you like to get there. You like to potty. You like to potty the dogs. I'll have to bring a crate ringside just in case I have a boy and a girl win. That means that somebody, one of the boys, will sit in a crate kind of thing, or however that's going to work. It's a 2-hour drive to the show site. So that leaves at 6, but that only gets us there for 8. So then we'll probably leave around 5:30, get there half an hour early. If I was showing a baby puppy, I would probably want to get there even earlier so that I can walk around the showgrounds with the puppy, get them used to the noise and the sights and sounds, get ringside and just chill. Like we said before, it's a lot of hurry up and wait. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's vendors, there's noises, there's other dogs, there's people. So we'll get there early. We'll get ringside. You have to get your armband, your number. You go to the desk. If you've ordered a catalog, you get your catalog. I always get a catalog. It tells me what the other breeding is of the other dogs that compete. Mm-hmm. So sometimes Hercules is the one that buys the catalog. You know, he's very good at that. He's a good boy. Then we'll get there and that's basically what we do. Bring a chair ringside just so that you have something to sit on, because you might end up waiting quite a while, especially if you have a younger dog and you're going there so that you're ahead of time and they can be acclimated to what's going on. Usually there's food vendors. So if you need something to eat or something to drink, you're good. Otherwise, bring your own. People will often, if they have high maintenance breeds, they'll rent or just obtain a grooming space. It's usually like a 4x4 or 5x5 section of the floor that's taped off, enough for you to have a chair and a grooming table and your dog's crate. Especially if you have a coated breed, you get them out of their crate and they're on the table and you can just take care of the last minute touch-ups that you need to do. Rat terriers are not a grooming breed, so we don't worry about that kind of thing.
That's my favorite kind, the non-grooming needed breed.
Oh, yes.
And why do people dress up to show their dogs confirmation?
Well, that's a good question. I have a closet full of outfits that remind me of Mad Men.
Uh-huh. Yes.
You've seen the show. I don't know. The latest craze for clothes, I think they're called St. John suits. American company from down south, I think maybe Florida. The suits retail in the $3,000 to $4,000 range.
What?
But show people aren't paying that. Show people are buying used St. John suits for like $300 or $400. They say they're comfy and they really like them. I buy my suits at secondhand stores for like $30. And it's a mark of respect to your judge to dress respectfully. And that usually is where I have discussions with people, because I'm not a really big fan of pantyhose. And if you show in the South, they insist that I have to wear my pantyhose. And I have friends down South, so that often happens to me. It's a very weird place to want to wear pantyhose. It's warm down right? South.
It is warm down there.
Yeah, bit of an issue. Up here in Canada, wear pantyhose, wear tights, leggings, whatever.
Exactly. Those thick old tights that help keep your legs warm.
Right. But down South, they like you to, I'm like, oh, okay, I'll put the pantyhose on. But it's a mark of respect to your judge to wear but you don't have to wear a skirt suit. You wear a pantsuit, and there's a lot of ladies that are rocking the pantsuits. The men get to wear absolutely fabulous suits, and they often have really neat ties and great socks.
Yep. It's so not fair. It's so not fair. How is it that, like, they sort of have the more boring wardrobe, and then it comes down to it, and they have the better clothing options. They can wear, like, really cool ascots if they have, like, a British breed. Like,
right?
It's very frustrating.
Well, there's a few men that dress in kilts.
Oh.
They have Scottish breeds, and they look fabulous. Just fabulous. I'm very jealous.
Very jealous. Do they have to wear pantyhose in the South?
Oh, that's a good... I don't want to know. Remember, we don't ask what's under the kilt. Don't ask. I get it. And it's always very interesting to me to dress up. I don't always put that much effort in. I often just wear a nice sweater and a decent pair of pants. Shoes are a tricky thing.
Yeah.
Depending on your breed... back to that German short hair pointer style, you're going to have to run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And finding footwear that actually is going to not make you look very strange in your Mad Men outfit and still allows you to gait your dog, that can be a little tricky. I've been lucky. Skechers are actually a decent brand. I quite like them. They seem to be doing a very good job with finding sort of the casual dressy shoe. So that's generally where I go to. And just making sure they're non-slip, because your floors are generally concrete, because they're done indoors for the most part. Floors are generally concrete with rubber matting. Mm-hmm. And I usually make sure the dog's on the matting. So I'm not always on the matting when I gate.
Right.
So I just got to make sure my shoes are sort of non-slip on the bottom.
Well, and I guess that's the thing that I always find the most, I guess, comical about the outfits is that there's the Mad Men suit, and then people are sort of like want to wear tennis shoes. And I'm like, you see, like, the form and the function here are really not matching. And this is a this is a breed show that's all about, like, meeting the need, and you're stuffing a square peg into a round hole here. Like,
know what impresses me? Handlers that wear white suits.
Oh, yeah.
I don't own anything white. I tried. I tried. I had one t-shirt. It got a muddy dog footprint on it, and it just went by the wayside. So those people that manage to wear cream or white suits, they deserve a ribbon.
Yeah, right, but they probably don't live in the Pacific Northwest. Aren't there other places of the country that you can live where there's less mud?
Canada's not one of them, but I can see where you're going with that. Down South, maybe.
Maybe in Texas. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's dry. That could very well be it.
Oh my gosh. That's funny. I actually said hi to a dog the other day at an agility trial, and she didn't jump up on me to say hi. And I was like, what kind of an agility dog are you? You didn't even jump up on me and get me all dirty.
Yeah. So funny.
I find it interesting when dogs don't jump.
Right?
I do. Mine climb all over me.
Yes.
They love me. And you're just like,
Ale comes and gives you like a full on hug every chance she gets. I mean, she's up here. And you know what I've come to appreciate about it? I don't have to bend down to pet her because she's up here.
Yeah.
I know. It's what I tell everyone. My dogs are going to jump on you. They're little. That's the way they say hi.
That's right. Yeah.
That's all they got.
Yeah. That's all they got.
Well, and that's, I just make sure I get really cute dogs so that people don't care. That's right? Kind of my modus operandi.
I don't know, though.
They're going to pet them regardless at that point. All good.
Yep.
Yeah. Lincoln's pretty cute, but the nose bashing is a little much for the jumping up.
Yeah.
So
well,
that doesn't
part.
Get him out of that
yeah,
trouble.
Fractal's so he's just so big. But that Sprite gets that pass like every time. She's so cute. Nobody cares.
Yep.
They're like, oh, look at your spotty little nose.
So I do want to know a little bit about sort of the skills that go along with maybe becoming a best in show type dog or whatever. How much of them winning is about the structure and the breed standards versus having a dog that's very well behaved and shows well?
And what does it mean to show well?
Yeah. I think if you want best in show, you have to have the whole package. You have to have a dog that really fits the standard. You have to have a dog that's very fit and in shape. A lot of people use treadmills if they can't get outside. There's a lot of exercise involved. You want them hard underneath. And you'll see some dogs in the show ring that look like they're carrying a little bit more weight than you might want for, say, an agility dog. In most cases, they're fit underneath, but then they've had some weight put on them just sort of to smooth them out. And if they're being campaigned heavily, what you end up with is that they're going off with not a stranger, because if they're being campaigned heavily, they're going with a handler that they're familiar with, but they're away from home.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of want to start them off and make sure that they have some weight on them. So it kind of takes a dog that has really solid nerves. They're going to travel a lot. They're going to go into a ring. They're going to be there all day because they've won their class, they've won their group, and now they don't get to have beers and go home. They have to stay and show, right? So you want a dog that's mentally really sound. You want a dog that's actually fairly uncomplicated. I've got a number of girls that will show for one day, and then they're like, yeah, we did this yesterday. Why are we here? I remember this, and I've done this, and I was really good at it yesterday. That should count. My boy dogs rock it. They're like, oh my God, we're doing it again. And there's more cookies. That's like the best ever. And you're like, yes, it is. Let's go. So they're really easy to get expression from. And they think that anything we do is interesting. The ladies are less inclined to think that in many cases.
Well, and so what do you train them for to go when they're going into the ring? Like I see on Facebook, like confirmation classes, like what's a confirmation class? What's that all about?
It's attention to you for the most part, because you're going to have a ring with 30 terriers in it, and you're going to have the person behind you be almost on top of you. And there's just no way around it. A lot of people will say that handlers are rude, but most people are so wrapped up in trying to present their dog that they're the spatial relationship in the ring. They're not really cluing in. So they'll be doing their gating around in group, and they'll be like running up behind you. You want your dog to be able to focus almost exclusively on you, but unfortunately it's for a very long period of time. And I think that's where I fall down on the job in many cases, is that I don't like duration. I would like to be moving along and doing something different. And unfortunately, when we're sitting in the ring, you might be there for 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes, and your dog has to be focused on you, and you got to make it fun, not just focused. They have to be animated. Their ears have to be up. Their tail has to be up. They have to think that this is a really fun game. I think that's where the boys do better. It is a really fun game. It's where the ladies are off staring at the ceiling going, does this place have squirrels or anything good that's going to happen? I'm just waiting for something fun to happen.
Well, it makes me think about Sprite, who's kind of an overthinker. And so I have to be really careful when I'm doing exercises with her, because if she does it perfectly the first time, or even like maybe I ask her 3 times, she's like, oh, well, it must be something else. Like, you're asking me to do it again. So it must be something else. And sort of, I'm thinking that she would feel that way about the confirmation ring. Like, hey, lady, I did this. I got stuff to do outside. Can we go?
Right. And we do for rat terrier generally because of their height. A lot of us free stack our dogs. There's free stacking and there's hand stacking. So once you've shown them on the table, that's just one element. So then now when you're back and you're in your group with the 29 or so other terriers, you're trying to, on your little piece of floor space, show off your dog to their best attributes, to their best ability. So a lot of people you'll see, and you'll see it in Westminster and you'll see it in other shows, they'll bend down beside their dog and they'll pose their head and they'll hold their tail. They may have to place a foot or two and they'll make eye contact with the judge. And basically you're telling the judge, hey, look at my dog. They deserve to win. Look at how good they look. I'm not getting down on the ground very easily, especially beside a rat terrier. I'm also not getting up very easily, unfortunately. So a lot of us will free stack our dog. And what you basically do is you stand in front of your dog and you face them. And then so you don't need so much space behind them. You have created this little space in front and you're standing there and you're looking at them and you use whatever bait, squeaky or cheese or whatever in front of them to keep their head and their attention focused on you. The thing with a free stacking dog is you're not down adjusting feet. Mm-hmm. So you sort of want them to be very good with knowing where to place their feet. And it's just basically a four square stance. My girls, we spend too long at that. They start to thinking their feet aren't in the right spot. And we start doing these weird dance. Mm-hmm. Front, back, front, back, front, back, front, back. And it's like, no, we don't need all that movement. We were fine. Mm-hmm. The boys, we'll get like 5 minutes of a stack out of them. They're just staring at that cheese. Wow. They're rocking it because they figure they'll get fed. The ladies think that they've done something wrong and need to adjust something.
I'm picturing, and nobody will see me, like you see the handlers at Westminster and they put the food in front of their face and then they bring it up to their face and they put the food down and they bring it up and they're kind of like bobbing their hand to try and get the head position that they want and that sort of like, the freeze,
I look guess. At attention. Yep.
Yeah. So that they can get that look.
I did one time go to a confirmation show when Tilly's breeder was up here judging. And because she's a judge for confirmation. And there was a little girl there. And I don't remember what breed her dog was. But she was very proud of her free stack. And she had a cue. She had it on cue. And she would tell it to the dog. And he would just blink. Freeze, right in position, throw its back feet back, you know, so that it was in this really nice stack. And she'd look at you and she said, see? It was very cute. And that dog knew exactly where his feet belonged.
And it's relatively easy to teach. It's like teaching the stand and then just emphasizing if a foot's out of place. And most times when you do a free stack, you just step into the dog and you make them back up because then you can bring them forward. Mm-hmm. And then you just reward for when it's correct. And most dogs get it really, it's a pretty easy thing to do. I do find, because I do rally obedience as well, that if I start to layer sits and downs and stands, my ladies will often start throwing me in alternative things for the cookie.
Mm-hmm. Offering behaviors. Yeah.
Right. It's not that you can't train them both at the same time. It's that depending on your dog, they're not going to have the duration to go. They said, stand, this is what we're doing. They'll start going, this is boring. And I'd like the cookie.
Yeah. Right. Just right. Like that. Well, but it makes sense that from their perspective, I did the thing and you didn't feed me. So you must want me to do something else.
Oh yeah.
Right. Which makes a lot of sense.
A lot of confirmation people will not teach obedience, even if they're going to compete, until after the dog's confirmation career is done, simply because it can mean the difference between winning and losing. And especially if you're going to go on and you're not really, you just want to get the championship and then you want to go on to do other performance stuff. Mm-hmm. You want to get your points and get it done as soon as possible. And if you've got a dog that's in a highly competitive breed and on the rail, the judge looks over and your dog's offering you sits and downs and stands, mm-hmm. you know, if you're that close to another dog and that dog's standing like a statue and the judge doesn't really have to think about it, they'll just give the nod to the dog that they didn't have to think about. Yeah. And your dog's over here being a rock star in the performance venue, but not in the right ring, basically.
Yeah.
So you'll get a lot of confirmation people will not train stuff until after the dog's confirmation is done.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of makes sense. You don't want competing behaviors. It reminds me, when I worked at PetSmart, I came across a very lovely Irish setter one day walking in the back of the store. And usually, you know, we had cookies and stuff stuck in our pockets. And I was like, oh, can I say hi to your dog? And she was like, yeah, sure. And can I give it a cookie? And I asked for a sit. And she was like, how dare you? She was not a very nice lady. And I was like, give me a break, lady. Like, how am I supposed to know? It was just, to me, it was incredibly rude. And at the same time, like, I get it now, but it was just such this like outmoded, ridiculous reaction that like, or you could have been nice about it, but okay, fine. I'll keep walking. So, you know, one, I hope my single ask for a sit didn't ruin that dog's career.
And you highly doubt that would have caused any issues for the dog. They would have just looked at you and gone, ma'am, I don't do that. Right. I just stand here.
That's all I know how to do. I
probably didn't know how to sit on cue.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, my dad's Kerry Blue Terrier came from a breeder, right? She sort of ended up deciding she wasn't going to show him. And he was, well, we don't really know how old he was. She was an interesting character. But he had no idea how to sit. And he was 18 months or something like that. He could not sit. He could heel like the best little thing ever. And he can stand on a grooming table like a champ. But he couldn't sit.
Yep. Just never compute, right? And it's in the ring, especially if it's a terrier ring, because it is really competitive. There's a lot of good dogs in there. And if you have a dog that's just willing to stand there and show off that whole time you're in the ring, it's just easier.
Yeah,
it really is. It's just easier. I don't mind if my dogs do different stuff in the ring. I let my guys bounce a lot. They'll bounce up on me because most of them will just then drop right back into a stand. And I mean, there is some showmanship from the handler's perspective involved as well. Keep an eye on your judge. Like, if your judge is over there looking at another dog and isn't looking down the line, you let your dog have a few moments. And you'll watch a lot of the professional handlers, they're sitting on the ground with their dog. They're letting their dog chill out, but they're the ones watching the judge. As soon as that judge is back to looking at the line and comparing breeds, and you can tell when they compare because they'll look at the dog they're judging and then they'll look back up the line to see what, hey, is that, you know, was that rat terrier that I really liked? Is it still, oh, it still looks pretty good. You know, you're not standing there with your legs looking like a giraffe or, you know, you're not upside down and the judge has to be like, oh, well, that's interesting. I mean, it's showmanship in any sport. You kind of want to know what your judge is and what they're looking at. Mm-hmm. So you can get away with some fun stuff with your dog in the ring for sure.
I assume because it's really about breed standards, only purebred dogs are in confirmation. Is that right?
In North America, yes. In the United Kingdom, they have classes for lurchers. Lurchers being any sort of sighthound crossed with either a collie type or crossed with a terrier type. Lurchers are fairly consistent in structure. So it's not hard for a judge to look at one and say, yes, looks like a lurcher because they have a job. Right. It's like looking at a generic collie breed and saying it's got collie structure, should be sound enough to do the job. So the UK does actually offer that as a venue. You will see juniors in North America showing anything really.
Okay.
Because for a junior to be competitive in confirmation, it's not about the dog. It's about their ability to handle the dog. So they could have a crossbreed. They could have a Lincoln.
Yeah.
Lincoln could go in with a junior for confirmation because it would just be their ability to handle him and get him to show off his best self. Sometimes juniors are asked questions in the ring, but for the most part, it's confirmation, it's structure. So where are the dog's withers? Where's the dog's pastern? Where's the root of the dog's tail? That kind of thing.
So if somebody wanted to try confirmation, what would you recommend they do to get started?
Probably classes. I go to classes mostly to train puppies. But sometimes you'll go and there'll be some interesting suggestions and you'll be like, wow, I never thought of it that way. This could benefit either the dog you have in front of you, or if you have somebody else at home, I might try it with that dog. So usually to find classes, you can check with local kennel clubs. So kennel clubs that are local would be clubs that put on confirmation shows, their host clubs, and mostly they are very interested in having new members. So they often offer classes. If it's a youngster that wants to try showing, there's a lot of canine 4-H clubs in the US, mm-hmm. and there's a number in Canada as well. So there would be some options if you have a youngster that wants to get into showing. They certainly would be able to find some 4-H canine clubs and they would be able to get started.
Awesome.
And the online resources, there definitely are. If you, and Facebook actually is a great resource for this. If you were to go on Facebook and you were to go to any of the clubs pages, or you were to go to any of the purebred appreciation pages, I know there's a number in Canada and there's definitely got to be a number in the US, and just ask, what's the best videos? What's the best presenters? There will definitely be suggestions out there for you. And a lot of handlers will do workshops. Oh. Workshops all the way from grooming your coated breeds mm-hmm. to how to handle and ring craft, which basically gives you a good idea how to get started in the ring, like getting your number and when to show up and what the rings look like and what the judge is going to ask you to do. And if you were a real beginner, it's a lot less nerve-wracking if you kind of have an idea of how the day goes about.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes sense.
I would want to know that for
sure. I'm starting to wonder if it's really just going to turn into dog book. I mean, I know like Facebook is huge, but I also keep hearing that, you know, it's less and less popular, but all the dog people are still saying, nope, Facebook, it's all yep. about Facebook. So
absolutely. Maybe
eventually we'll get rid of all of the things we don't like about Facebook and we'll just keep all of the dog stuff.
I'm good with that. We could probably
make that work.
Well, Jennifer, thank you for taking the time to chat with us today. I'm really, of course, looking forward to seeing how Hercules progresses. And I'm glad that I know a little more about how it all works now, so I can be more informed as you tell me about his adventures. This was really interesting. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. I kind of like this as like a demystifying episode as much as
yes.
anything else. Like, oh, that's true. That's not true. So this was very informative and fun. Thank you very much.
Oh, well, thanks for inviting me, ladies. I enjoyed being able to share some of what goes on, so that if anyone that's listening is interested, they'll have an idea on where to get started and what actually goes on when you go to a confirmation show.
Yeah, thank you.
So that's all for today's episode. Don't forget to rate, share, and subscribe to our podcast so you can join us for our next episode. In the meantime, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, or by visiting our website at www.caninehijinks.com.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to go out and have some fun with your dogs. Talk to you next time.